It's Monday, the 6th of April, day 16. There was a tweet this morning from the Irish novelist Anne Enright. Honestly, she said, there's a lot to be said for tooling about all day, looking up recipes and not making them, not bothering to paint the living room, and failing to write a novel. In the middle of the messy non-event called your mid-afternoon, you might get something, a thought to jot down, a piece of gossip to text a pal. Boredom is a productive state so long as you don't let it go sour on you. Try not to confuse the urge to get something done with the idea that you are useless. Try not to confuse the urge to contact someone with the thought that you are unloved. Do the thing, or don't do it. Either is fine. Enright's tweet chimes neatly with some conversations we've been having. In a way, the last 2 weeks of enforced isolation have been a bit like a holiday. At any rate, my wife and I have reverted to the way we were when on vacation, getting up early to feed the yowling cats, who see no reason why anyone would not be up and about at dawn, making some tea, downloading the day's cryptic crossword from the Irish Times, and then going back to bed to sit up puzzling over 8 across and 5 down, and making lists on the back of the crossword of things that, in an ideal world, should be done, and probably won't be. And by the time we've done all that, it's 10:15 and we haven't even had breakfast. We found ourselves losing track of time and realising with a start that it was 6:30 and we hadn't given a thought to supper. In fact, it got to the point where the only creatures in the house who had any sense of time were the cats, who, by the way, are under the impression that we are their servants. P.G. Wodehouse was right about cats. The explanation for their imperious manners, he famously observed, is that they know that the ancient Egyptians worshipped them as gods. Anyway, the result of all of this was a decision that we'd had our 2 weeks' holiday, and now it was time to get back to a proper routine. Early rising, early breakfast, and then to work. This morning, I had a 2-hour online meeting of a steering group I'm on, followed by an online seminar given by Jamie Susskind about a book he's writing. Its title is The Digital Republic, A Principled Approach to Regulating Tech. And it's an interesting idea about how to escape the fruitless merry-go-round we're currently locked into when trying to figure out how to regulate the tech giants who are growing increasingly powerful. In essence, Susskind thinks that we are currently locked into a liberal paradigm about governance, when what we really need is a republican paradigm. As he was talking, I found myself wondering, yeah, well, how might that apply to the UK, which may or may not be liberal, but definitely is monarchical, all that baloney about the royal prerogative, and so on. In both cases this morning, the technology we used was Zoom, and on the whole, it was pretty successful. There's a certain amount of craft, though, in getting to use it effectively. For example, when using it for a seminar, you need to make sure that everyone except the speaker has muted their microphones while he or she has the floor. Otherwise, everyone hears curious puttering noises, as if there were mice in the woodwork, because someone in the group who hasn't muted is typing notes as they go. And there are also conventions about how to signal that you wish to speak. Essentially, you click on an icon to put up your hand, or rather like we used to do in infant school. Now, of course, video conferencing is a communications channel with much narrower bandwidth than a face-to-face meeting. It's significantly better, though, than telephone conferencing, but that wouldn't be hard, because the only thing worse than phone conferencing is smoke signals. On the other hand, the speaker today was in London, and the rest of us were all over the place. And you only have to think of all the time, expense, and carbon emissions that were saved, even if you couldn't spot that, say, one of the listeners was growing restive because they disagreed with the speaker, or that another was trying unsuccessfully to stifle a yawn. Not that anyone was doing either in this particular case, at least as far as I could tell. Now that universities all over the place are discovering that, wow, this kit can be really useful, I can't really imagine us going back to what it was like before we were forced to think outside of the box. But that may be a bit optimistic. You never can tell with universities. After all, they've been using the same teaching model for 800 years. And old habits die hard.